Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight number 609 for comics originally released on April 10th, 2019. Now, starting us off in DC is Flash number 68. And I'm just going to say at the outset, we're probably going to have a little more spoilers than usual in here when we get to talking about the ending, because I kind of think we have to with this one.
I would agree with that.
Now, I was a little behind, so I read the previous parts of The Return of the Trickster, the original Trickster, just over the weekend. So
okay, cool.
Fresh in my mind, and I may blur a little as to what's in which issue. How long have you been reading Flash?
Since Flash number one with Williamson on it.
Okay, so this run.
Run of Flash is my Flash, yes.
Okay. I go a bit further back. I've been reading for about four decades.
Ah, a long time. Well, and I'm assuming other writers have been better, because Williamson is not my favorite writer on this Flash title.
I think we've got a consensus there.
All right, cool.
I mean, the decision to bring back the James Jesse Trickster, the original one, I find kind of interesting. I'm not really for or against it, but this character was killed off prior to Final Crisis, like in 2007 or something.
Yeah, they were joking around about it in there, but they didn't put like a little C issue this or C, you know, the editor didn't put anything in there. So I didn't know when he died, but I knew he was dead at some point.
He's been dead for a Flash or two, really.
Nice. He's back.
Yeah. And this version, frankly, just feels a little out of character.
Okay, and I don't have that frame of reference, so tell me how he's out of character.
Well, before his death, he was just kind of an annoying practical joker. He was a con man and stuff, but he was one of those that, almost one of the running gags in one of the last major storylines with him, leading up towards Final Crisis and such, I think. He was so annoying to so many people, he just kept getting, you know, punched in the nose and stuff.
Ah, okay.
You know, by just one person after another, just with kind of a "will you shut up, please" sort of thing.
Okay, gotcha.
And here, he's kind of a wannabe mastermind or something, an egotistical one, and annoying, but in a different way.
Yeah, I found him very annoying in this book, so, yeah.
And it also goes against some of what they had established with this character, again, that we're reaching 10, 15 years ago. But he decided at one point to turn over a new leaf and become a good guy.
Okay, all right.
And he had sufficient motivation for that.
And now he's back on the other path.
Yes.
Ah, okay. And now I can see why you're confused a little bit, or frustrated with it.
Frustrated is the better way.
Frustrated, yes. Why are they doing this? And why did they bring him back to life? Who knows?
Don't know, but the reason he became a good guy, just to give a little motivation, because, I mean, there's some, oh, we'll try it for a while, it doesn't stick, whatever. He, as part of, again, what led up to, I believe it was Final Crisis, but one of the crises back then.
Okay.
Had been trapped in hell with, I think, some of the other rogues, and he actually managed, and again, spoilers here, oh well, sorry, to con Neron, who was the Lord of Hell.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So he got one over, essentially, on the devil.
Ah, all right.
Afterwards, he realizes sooner or later he's going to die. Turns out he was right on that, by the way. And he probably didn't want to go back to hell, because not only is it just hell in general, but he kind of, you know, one-upped the guy ruling it.
Turned over a new leaf.
You want to be a good guy, so you wind up maybe in heaven, or at least purgatory and not hell.
Exactly.
Where everybody gets treated poorly, and you in particular would get treated poorly.
Yes.
So, good motivation.
Yeah, super motivation. Here, there's no explanation as to why he's bad, I guess, then, because I've just seen the character and he's bad from the jump.
Yeah. So I didn't care for that part of it.
Okay.
There was a part of this arc in a previous issue that really didn't make Barry Allen look that great.
Okay, which part?
When his friend at the police department introduces her boyfriend, James Jesse.
Yes.
And it's him.
Yes.
Now, can you imagine Barry Allen, who not only knows these people with their costume and masks on, but has seen them unmasked because, well, he's the Flash, he's captured them, he's a cop, he's, you know, seen their
He knows who they are. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. He didn't recognize the name. He didn't recognize the face. Okay, he's been dead for a while, and arguably this is the first time we've seen him in this continuity, but they establish he existed in this continuity.
Yeah, so that is weird. Why is he doing that?
To me, this comes down to the writing.
Yeah, and I'm trying to figure out why the writer would just take this radical change without any explanation as to why he's changing them, or if he just doesn't know.
I think he knows, because he was referencing some of the past stuff. Not all of it, but enough of it that he should know. But to me, it kind of comes down to, this is a roller coaster ride kind of a story.
Yeah.
The plot twists and curves and turns and whatnot to keep the reader kind of off balance and guessing.
Yeah, that's true. So that's really weird. Now, one thing also in this book, how the Sage Force is portrayed in here is very weird.
Unclear as well, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, how does this use of the Sage Force have anything to do with Sage? I'm like, what is this? That makes no sense. I'm like, what? Why is the trickster using it? Why is it working out this way? I that just made no sense to me. I'm like, what is this?
It's like he's somehow now this super scientist or whatever.
Yeah, I was just reading it. I'm like, to me, the story seemed a little bit nonsensical without having the background. It seemed a little nonsensical to me. I'm like, what's going on?
Having the background, it seemed inexplicable.
Yeah, so, okay, this is worse than what I thought.
Yeah, I was disappointed with the writing on a couple of scores. The previous issue had ended on a cliffhanger, and I think in here they kind of reference it in a flashback with here's why we picked up where we did, not where we left off. And it kind of sort of made sense, but it's like, well, why didn't you just show us that?
Yeah, that's really weird. And they also, I don't know much about the Trickster, or not the Trickster, but James Jesse. But same thing. But I'm trying to figure out, is he like this wahaha bad character where, like, you know, the exposition and talking about his plans and how things come about, is that normal for him?
There's not much about this that's normal for him.
Okay, it just seems really, I don't know, kind of cliche and cheesy to me. I mean, it wasn't bad. It just seems like kind of like trying to kick it old school, you know, where they come out and tell you their whole plan. But I don't know. There was just a lot of weird stuff in this, and I didn't like the use of the Force. I didn't care for the character that much. He just seemed, like I said, kind of cheesy to me. And then the ending was just like, what are they doing?
I dislike the ending on multiple counts. One, because I thought it was, just kind of gross. But two, I think the writer overplayed his hand in such a manner that just, like, requires an undo next issue.
It has to. If not next issue, the issue after that. You know, somebody else who's super fast is going to have to go back in time now and fix what has happened.
Or it didn't really happen and it's a mind game.
Oh, and they went all Batman-esque on us. Oh, wonderful. We're in a nightmare.
But the final page reveal has a definitive change to a character that somehow the character hadn't noticed on the previous page. All right, whatever. But it's one of those that literally cannot stand. You have to undo it.
You have to undo it. And it was really kind of, like you said, I guess kind of gross. And when I was first reading, I was like, okay, breaking loose. Thud. Oh, okay. I was like, that would just be like, okay, we no longer need to read The Flash going forward.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it was a strategic error on multiple things, and it kills the suspension of disbelief.
Yeah, I would agree with that. This is the guy, Williamson, is the only one who's tacked on to all these new forces with Scott Snyder coming out of, Justice League with that little spinoff. But I haven't liked his implementation of the stuff. This was just another silly implementation. So now they brought back to life a character, no explanation how or why, changed that character, and then took the main character of this book and made him useless.
They did do a little bit of a hand-wavy explanation for how and why the Trickster came back, I think, last issue, the one before. It wasn't good, but they at least attempted.
Okay, I just don't remember it.
It was that forgettable.
Yeah.
Actually, I think what they were basically saying is that he had never died.
Oh,
which, again,
better.
Goes against what we'd seen in the previous pre-Flashpoint continuity.
Because he was in hell.
Yeah, I still want to see an explanation here for this rubber chicken of magic lightning or whatever.
Yeah, what is that? I don't know what that is. I was looking at that going, what? Just so many things in here are just kind of weird to me. I'm like, I don't know if he's running out of ideas or what it is, but Williamson is, he's been doing weird stuff with this book. He kind of lost me like in the 40s of this title.
Mm-hmm.
I almost considered dropping it because he had made it kind of convoluted and confusing to me. I'm like, okay, this isn't enjoyable. But I keep sticking with it because I've been on it since the first issue, and it's a main character in the DCU. But I still would never say the Flash is my favorite character based on this writing.
I love the Flash. I've been reading it forever and a day, and this is not a good run of it.
Yeah, so I'm stuck with the kind of like a bad iteration of it as my entry point, which is, I guess it can only get better from here.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Hopefully it will.
Me too. I'm hoping. I'm keeping my fingers crossed because I actually like Flash. That's my favorite of the DC television shows. That's my favorite one.
Well, and it's funny because in the show, he's got a very kind of upbeat personality and such, which is really missing from this writer's depiction of the character. Not just this issue, but in general.
No, they seem like two completely different characters, the TV Flash versus the comic book Flash, which is weird. You'd think they'd want to meld or mesh those characters together, and for whatever reason, they're not.
Well, classically, the Flash has always been a brighter, happier character.
Yeah, I would imagine.
And granted, he's gone through some rough times of late, but he's very
upbeat.
Well, I mean, in this story, he's not upbeat is the thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's not in here, and he rarely is in this run.
So I think they've just got, in my opinion, the wrong take on the character.
I would agree, and it's almost like it has to be like when Grant Morrison came in, which I think made the character Green Lantern worse. But you almost need to just take a whole new writer and just say, "Here we go, issue one," and or kind of start over, or not even issue one, but just change directions, because I feel like I have yet to enjoy this title beyond just like it's okay, it's good, or not that good. But it never gets out of that it's okay category for me. Every now and then it's like a little bit above average.
You got to read some classic Flash stuff.
Yeah. Was Geoff Johns really good? I don't know.
He had a good run for the Wally West stuff. Mark Waid had a brilliant run.
Mark Waid,
If you go back to kind of pre-Crisis and stuff, there was a lot of classic stuff in, I'm going to say, from like 270 to 350 or whatever when the title ended.
Okay.
A lot of great stuff.
That's what I get to get caught up on, some of the good stuff, because sometimes I read these things and, you know, being a newer reader, you come in and this is what I know. And I'm just like, you know, if I read this and I didn't watch a TV show, I'd be like, why is the Flash like a really popular character at DC? This comic's not that great.
Well, and when I started reading The Flash, it was just a different era. It was when the Rogues would actually routinely, you know, rob banks and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, so
nobody does that anymore in the comics.
They don't. They don't. Well, hey, we have not reviewed our next comic yet.
That's true. That's true. For this, I'm going to go with a C-. I like the character. I don't like this iteration of it. I thought there was some nonsensical stuff in the story. But it's an entertaining story, even if it's just a bit of a roller coaster ride. Don't think about it, and you'll like it more.
Yeah, I think I thought about it too much, and I was like questioning some things in here. I went with the C+. I was like, this is a little bit better than an average issue. It's not horrible. It's not broken. It's just, to me, I was just like, the forces make no sense. The character, the ending, I was just like, okay, they set it up where, like you said, it has to be a dream or they have to reset it. So I was just kind of disappointed with that.
Yeah, I think anytime they do that kind of thing where they've got to just completely back out of it, they've made a mistake.
I agree.
Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Sounds good.
This is Symbiote Spider-Man number 1. We've got Peter David on the writing, and on the art, we've got some of it by Greg Land and some of it by Ivan Coelho?
Ivan Coelho? Oh,
And Frank D'Amata. I probably butchered both of those names, and I apologize.
Oh, that's okay. I'm like trying to read it, too.
They had the flashback sequence done by a different team.
Okay, yeah, yeah. And you can tell. You can see the difference in the art.
Yes. Yes, you can. I had not pre-ordered this, but when we decided to review it, I asked Eric to Cowabunga to send me a copy and add it to my order, so he did, so I've got it.
Cool.
I originally got on board Spider-Man with Secret Wars way back in the day, and which is when he first got his black suit, so this era of Spider-Man.
And believe it or not, I read that Secret Wars, so you know, I go back with Marvel. I don't go back with DC, but yeah, I remember that.
You know, and as a concept, I'm not really keen on these attempts to kind of relive the earlier eras of certain characters' lives or whatever.
Yeah.
It just feels a little forced, a little odd sometimes. But I like this era of Spider-Man. I like many eras of Spider-Man, so I didn't narrow it down much, I suppose. This was an accessible story, and I really thought Peter David did a good job capturing kind of the tone and the style and the history of that period of Spider-Man really well without it feeling dated.
I agree. It almost read like a new comic, except that I knew they were taking us back in time. I think Peter David's probably the best person to do it. He's been writing comics for a long time, so he has that I wrote back then, but he's still writing currently, which he's able to modernize it. And then Greg Land did a great job with the art. You know, I mean, some people hate him, and I understand, you know, with some of the stuff that's come out with him. But, you know, he makes great camera angles, and he actually is a really good artist.
He is. He over-references at times and gets knocked for that. But he's solid, he's a good storyteller, and was a good match with Peter David on this.
Yeah, so it felt like a classic comic, yet very modern, and like you said, very accessible. So I was happy with it, because not even knowing that era of Spider-Man, I feel like you can jump in and read this.
Mm-hmm.
Which
and
was
I
cool.
I think they should get high marks for that, definitely.
Yeah, and I was happy to see Felicia in here.
She was a mainstay of the book at the time.
Yeah, I've forgotten about that, and then I was like, oh yeah, Felicia. And they're getting ready to come out, I think, with a Black Cat comic pretty soon.
They are.
And I'm on board with that.
So I thought this was good. They kind of retconned one or two things with Mysterio just to give him a little bit more of a backstory or whatnot, I guess. Which kind of worked, kind of didn't, I don't know. It depends where they go with it. It wasn't bad. It seemed a little heavy-handed.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean with that.
But again, it was fun to see this era. I was surprised to see the Human Fly in here, to be honest.
Me too. I was surprised to see that. That was kind of surprising. And then how that ended up was very surprising.
Yeah. I'm curious where they're going with some of this and how exactly where in the timeline it's set in terms of what's going on with the suit and stuff like that.
I agree, because I haven't read this stuff since when I originally read it. So, you know, my memory is not that great on that stuff. But I remember, you know, the black costume. I remember Black Cat. I remember stuff from back then.
Mm-hmm.
But this is kind of like reminding me, but it's, of course, a different story. So I like that. And then I liked it. It was like, it's a good story, but it's not too formulaic, which that's Peter David. They picked a good writer to do this. And, you know, put Peter David on Spider-Man and give him something 90s-ish or 80s-ish, and he's going to do a good job.
Yeah. No, I would agree with that.
Yeah, that's kind of like his forte. He's known for that.
I think Peter David's got a pretty wide range of what he can do. He can do kind of a bit more slapsticky kind of stuff. He can do stuff that's actually got some meat to the story and whatnot that you've got to actually dig for. I've read a ton of his comics over the years, quite a few of his novels. Matter of fact, I would say he's the only one. Well, I don't know if he's the only. He's the only one I can think of that's actually gotten his own little branch of the Star Trek franchise in novels.
Oh, really? I did not know.
He's got the New Frontiers novels. I don't know if they're still coming out or not, but they did at least a dozen or more of them. It was a new crew, a couple of characters we knew from Next Gen and one or two other places were in there. But it was his own little kind of stuff that he was able to go do.
Yeah, I'm actually looking on my bookshelf here in my computer room, and I have a Peter David book. It's Hulk, What Savage Beast.
Mm-hmm.
Of course it's a Hulk book.
Of course it's a Hulk book. But he's done a lot of other stuff.
He has.
So, this is a 5-issue miniseries. I don't think I realized that when it was starting.
I didn't either.
I probably could have guessed, but I didn't bother. Like I said, I didn't pre-order this, and at this point I'm debating if I'm going to add it to my order at Cowabunga, and there's a good chance I might.
Oh, cool. Yeah, actually, I enjoyed it. I'm on board. I didn't know it was going to be a miniseries. I don't know if I didn't pay attention enough or whatever, but I said Peter David, Greg Land, Spider-Man sounds like a winner to me. And I'm enjoying what we got so far, and I'm on board. And there is some bank stuff that goes on in here, as we were just talking about. They don't do it that much in comics anymore.
They had to go retro for it.
Yes, so they're going back to the well.
So, it was, like I said, it was fun. I'm going to go with a B+ on this. I thought it was solid. And if you like this era of Spider-Man, or you like Peter David, or you like Mysterio, there's a lot of good reasons to go pick this up.
Great. And Uncanny, because I gave it a B+ as well. I enjoyed it. I think if you're a fan of Peter David, Spider-Man, some of you will and won't be Greg Land, but I love Greg Land. you'll enjoy it.
I think as long as you're not a pathological hater of Greg Land, you'll be fine.
Exactly, because there are some people that have a lot of vitriol. I'm like, come on. Well, if I could look at a picture and draw as well as he does, I'd be super happy.
I mean, there are places with the Black Cat in particular where you can tell it's very, you know, referenced.
Yeah.
But you look at Aunt May, you look at Spider-Man in the all black costume and stuff, the guy can draw.
He can draw, and I've actually seen him draw, you know, like just draw from memory and what a scene he wanted to draw, and he's actually very talented. I think it just comes down to, you know, you try to speed things up. You know, you want to go quick. Okay, boom, boom, let's do this. And I can understand that.
Or maybe he's just not comfortable with how he draws faces.
That could be, too.
If so, I think he's wrong. I think he does a fine job.
I do, too. I think he's a great artist. So I'm not a hater. I actually am still a fan, even though there's some reference every now and then. I like it.
Yeah. Shall we move on to our other book?
Sounds good.
This is Fair Lady Number 1 from Image Comics. Now, this is one of those cases where I only ordered the pre-ordered the first issue of the series. So I was, you know, okay, I'll give it a shot, but, you know, we'll find out. But I also had gotten some information prior to reading this that you could argue is or isn't a spoiler or whatever, but it certainly did predispose my reading of it in certain areas.
Okay. All right.
I'm not going to say good or bad, but it changed. I don't know if I would have made certain comparisons otherwise.
Okay. All right.
Overall, this was an okay story. I'm not going to say it was brilliant. It contains a complete mystery. I think was a little overblown.
Yes.
Technically it does. I just didn't think it was a really great mystery. It certainly wasn't a fair play mystery.
I thought it was a pretty horrible mystery.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry to laugh like that at the writer's expense, but I was just like, I was kind of like, for it to be a mystery, shouldn't there be something that we should be solving or maybe a clue that we should be seeing? But no, it's just handed to you. Here's what we found. You know, it's like, okay, and all right. No, how did you find this? Or why did you find this? Or where you looked for it? It's so weird.
This is the kind of thing where I'm of the opinion that the biggest problem with this issue was that it was the first issue.
I think so, too. And even though it was oversized, it felt like the characters, there's very little characterization. They weren't fleshed out. I didn't care for him. Like, Jennifer Faulds is the girl, and then Jesu, the cat guy, I didn't feel connected to them in any way, because I don't know much about them.
Exactly. If we had had, say, half a dozen or a dozen issues where we'd actually gotten to know them over time, this exact issue might have read a lot better.
I agree. So, I mean, that was the biggest thing. I was like, I went through it, I'm like, man, I don't know why I should care. I currently don't care. And then there was just, like, some weird things, you know, like, I think I'm scrolling through a digital copy, by the way. When they went and they first found their set of clues, you know, they kind of had them laid out on a table. I think it's on, on page 19, they have one clue. There's this thing they found, this basically a rock, and you're like, okay, they found it, but you didn't tell me how you found it, why it matters. I mean, it's very weird. Then later on, they try to give you something to tell you why it matters, but they just continually do that. Like, they say, oh, we found a glove, we found a this, we found a that, and it's like, okay, how did you find this? Because I didn't see you guys searching for any clues. I saw you interrogate two people.
Well, it's interesting, because one of the pages I liked was early on, and they had that splash of the house or the apartment or whatever it was.
Yeah.
It's the overhead shot, and you see certain things highlighted.
Yes.
It's like, okay, that's cool. Now, I don't think that rock was anywhere to be found in there.
Yeah, I didn't see the rock.
And it's like, well, it should have been.
Yeah, there's just like, here's all this stuff. And I'm like, okay.
So I never saw how any of that played into the story. But I think there were also a few things even before that, when we first get to that 5 days earlier, a couple of pages in.
Yeah.
And we get the area, the city or town or what is town. It's not a city.
Looks like it's a like, body.
Yeah, is that a giant mech robot it's kind of built inside of?
That's what I was wondering. I'm like, maybe this story's going to be fleshed out. Maybe this war that they referenced, maybe they're fighting in gigantic mechs. I don't know. But that's what I thought, too. I was like, this looks like Pacific Rim, you know, like those Jaegers.
Yeah, it does. I was going to go actually, you know, Super Sentai or whatever, but it's more of a Jaeger look to it. You're right.
Yeah. So I was just
it's
like,
a giant mech of some sort.
Yeah. I was just like, what is this? And why is there a city built inside of it?
So, I mean, this has got a sci-fi bent to it, but it's also got a Western bent to it. It's got a female lead law enforcement kind of officer of some sort.
Yeah.
And it had already, before I read it in my mind, had somebody had compared it to Copperfield. Or yeah. Copperhead.
That was Drew. He said that online, and as soon as he said Copperhead, I was like, oh yeah, I feel like I'm reading Copperhead again.
I wasn't going to throw Drew under the bus, but since you did, okay.
Sorry, Drew. Sorry, old co-host.
No, no. It's one of those things, though. I mean, and he basically had just a couple of things to say. He made it sound like the back matter was going to be more than I felt it was.
Yeah.
For him, I guess the Dunham One mystery worked for him. It didn't work for me. And I can see the comparisons to Copperhead.
Yeah.
But I don't know that I necessarily would have made them myself. I think Copperhead's a much better story in series.
Yeah, what I got in the Copperhead was the anthropomorphic characters, and it looked like Copperheady art, if that's a term, but I agree with you. I think Copperhead was a better read than this. It was more fleshed out, you cared about the characters, and I don't know if that's because I read it in a trade, because that's how I did read it, but this one I read it, and I was just like, I feel like I, with the Dunham one, I don't care about the characters enough. Okay, I've read this mystery. I don't know if I want to read the next mystery.
With this, it's easy to be done in one.
Yes. Yeah, and that could be a pro or a con. And for me, it's definitely a con because I didn't pre-order this, so it doesn't make me want to pre-order anything else.
Yeah, that's where I'm at, too. There's nothing in the subplots or whatever, if there were any, to drag me to the next issue. The main plot is done, so I wasn't hooked on any of the characters. The show a page and then kind of come back to it later to start on a action sequence and then end on the action sequence. It didn't totally work for me either. Matter of fact, I'm not positive, but I think it's the exact same page of art used twice.
It is. I'm almost positive.
So I just, it's not that it's a bad issue or bad story, but I didn't go in with any attachment to the characters. I didn't leave with any attachment to the characters. And I think if we'd gotten to know this world a bit better, if we'd gotten to know these characters a bit better, everything in this issue as is, it still would have had its flaws, but I think it would have worked better.
I agree.
There's nothing that makes me think I should come back for more, and particularly if, you know, the comparison to Copperhead, if you agree with that or not, you know, it's like, well, there's another book over at Image that's similar-ish enough, well, I could just stay over there.
Yeah, that's kind of like something that kind of happens. There's success with something or a genre or a title or whatever it is, and it seems like everyone kind of piles on and they go down that path. And you know, the big thing right now is a mishmash of genres. Let's take this genre and this genre and we'll stick it together. And that's kind of like the flavor of the month. You know, for a while there, it was sci-fi. Everyone had a sci-fi book, and Image had so much sci-fi. And then somebody else goes off and does this, and then you see four or five books that are very similar right now in the same vein. So
yeah.
I think it's almost like a chasing the hot thing because they don't know, you know, when it's going to – when something's hot, can they hit? Because you don't know where the interest is going to be next. And so they're always chasing it.
I think some of it's that, but I think some of it is also the same things are influencing multiple creative teams.
It could be.
I mean, there's a lot of, you know, Star Wars and Star Trek movies out, so, okay, people are thinking sci-fi.
And so everyone kind of goes that route.
You know, you get things that are of a different ilk, and people are intrigued by that. Oh, I can do better. I'll go write something like that.
Yeah.
So I don't know that it's just the mercenary chasing what they think is the next big thing, or the current big thing or whatever, although I think there is some of that as well. I just think this needed to have more than the window dressing of Western and sci-fi and mystery. It needed to have some meat to it. I didn't think there was any character that was particularly intriguing or any plot hook or anything like that for me to say, I'll come back because of this.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. Like, for me, it was like, okay, they tried to flesh out the world a little bit, and I think they're going to do a better job, I'm assuming. You know, they said, oh, they'd start telling about this war and, you know, how magic and people died. Okay, we're building the war. They didn't build the two main characters, and so I don't care about them at all. So I just read this done in one. And for all I know, I'm assuming this won't be the thing, but for all I know, it could be two completely different characters in the next issue, because this story is done. Now, I'm assuming it'll be the same two, and maybe they'll flesh them out, but, you know, they didn't do enough to keep me around for the second issue.
Yeah, I think the fact that this is planning to have 5-issue arcs, pause, do a trade, do another arc, and that it's an ongoing series, I wish them luck. I hope they can do that, but I think that's a little optimistic.
I would agree. Yeah, yeah, I would agree with you there. So, and now the one thing I will say that was kind of enjoyable, I like Copperhead art. This art was not bad. I thought it was a decent job.
Art wasn't bad, but it wasn't brilliant. It wasn't, oh my God, this is amazing art or something.
No, it's just like, it's for an image book, it's pretty decent.
Yeah, it was fine art. I mean, the story was okay, but that's just it. It was only okay.
Yeah, for $4, I can spend my money on some better things. Or however much this is, I don't know. I'm reading a digital review copy.
I mean, they had 30 pages to hook us.
Yeah.
So they had the page count.
Yeah, which is usually the problem, and that's not the problem here.
They just didn't use the space well.
Yeah. You know what? I think they would have been better off if they said, hey, let's flesh out the characters, create this world, tell people why they should care, have the hook of a mystery, and then do done-in-one mysteries going forward. Then
yeah,
maybe I would be on board.
I think they could have done a done-in-one mystery here, but it needed to be a much better than just a miscellaneous missing persons one.
Yeah, some lady who's taking some cash and missing.
Yeah, it should have been something that really firmly established either the main character or the sidekick.
Yeah, and even the wrapping of this mystery is like, all right, we end it like that.
Yeah, it wasn't horrible, it was just lackluster.
Yeah.
And I think this could grow into something good, but I think they needed to do that in the first issue.
Yeah. If you are reading it, please let us know if it gets any better in the future on the Slack channel or on the forums.
Yeah, because I'm not sticking with it. I'm going to go with a C, and I'm pretty sure you're not going to stick with it either.
I am not going to stick with it. I didn't go with it to begin with, and I'm not going in there now. I was actually, just like you, I was being charitable. I went with a C. I was like, it's average. It's not good at all, but it's not bad either. It's just vanilla.
It's competent.
It's competent.
Just, I mean, the story told the story it was setting out to do. I just think it wasn't a great story they set out to tell.
Yeah, so that would be the best thing. It's a competent comic book, and when I'm buying a comic book and when I'm reading a comic book, I want more than competent. I want something that's going to hook me and keep me engaged, and I want to read more.
And certainly, I think when you're doing a first issue, it's got to be your A game, and maybe this is their A game. I think they can do better. I think they will do better. They just didn't do that here.
Yeah, well, since doing reviews, I have realized that most writers can write a good first issue. A lot, not all of them, can write a good last issue. It's the stuff in the middle where they kind of trip all over themselves.
Yeah, it's funny because I think there's an advantage on a first issue because there's no preconceived notion. They can set the rules as they lay out the story. And it's easy to have a great, not easy, it's possible to have a great first issue. And then the second issue, it's like, well, I already know this world. So that part of the shininess is gone. You know, it's hard to come back and follow up solidly with that.
It's true. That's usually when books will start to lose me, if they do lose me. The first issue, it's pretty easy to hook me. You know, and this one not doing it, that's not a good sign for me. But it's usually around that middle of that first arc. I'm like, okay, it's starting to be like, all right, I read it. It's not going anywhere. But I hate when you're reading a book and it's like, wow, great first issue. And you get to the sixth issue, you're like, great ending. I can't really remember what happened in the middle. And it seems like a lot of comics go down that path.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of unfortunate. Not all of them. The ones that don't are amazing comics.
But enough do that it does get a little old.
Yeah, yeah. So you and I have experienced that. You more so than me, because you've read a heck of a lot more than I have.
I have read a fair number of comics. That is true.
Yeah. Speaking of which, it was funny. I had my Game of Thrones party the other day. We watched it on Monday versus Sunday when we recorded it. My brother-in-law, my sister came over. We had some, you know, some snacks, some drinks, you know, a lot of unhealthy food. It was great.
Cool.
I took them into my comic room and I was like, the collection's grown a little bit, because they haven't seen it for probably like 2 or 3 years. And they walked in and they're like, oh my God, what's going on here? I'm like, I became a reviewer. I buy a lot more.
But you're enjoying it, right?
Yeah, I'm enjoying myself. I'm having fun. I don't want to move it one day. One day I'm dreading that move.
Yeah, yeah. There is that part that's, I think, the main appeal of digital for some people.
Yeah, where you can just, I'll take my iPad with me.
Just much lighter weight.
Yeah. So, anyways, that was kind of fun. But hey, I was going to ask you, I know you kind of wait for the movie, so you haven't seen Shazam or what's the other movie that's out right now?
Or Aquaman or Captain Marvel or Ant-Man and Wasp or Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse or probably a few others. I'm behind.
Well, an uncanny thing happened to me. Did you ever see the movie Venom?
Not yet. That's one of the other ones I'm behind on.
Ah, darn. Because that was about a year ago. I'm like, maybe you've seen it.
Came out half a year ago.
Half a year ago.
I think I was in Japan at the time.
All right. I recorded it. It came out like on HBO or Showtime, one of them. I recorded it. And I just happened to watch it this weekend. And then I read Symbiote Spider-Man. I was like, man, perfect timing.
Yeah, that is good timing for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it was just uncanny how that happened. I was like, that is really cool.
I'm curious how many characters in particularly the Spider-Man neck of the woods we would not have had if that whole black costume stuff had never happened.
That's true.
You wouldn't have Venom, you wouldn't have Carnage, you wouldn't have Toxin, you wouldn't have Antitoxin, you wouldn't have...
what are those white things that they have nowadays? The poisons.
Yeah, I mean, all of those things you wouldn't have had.
Yeah, it's crazy how many things have come out of that. And my wife and I are watching, I was like, oh, those are Clintars. And she's like, what? And then later on, she started calling them Clintars. I was like, oh, did they mention it in the movie? I'm like, I don't remember. She's like, no, you told me so. I was like, I forgot I told her. But I'm like, yeah, they're not symbiotes, they're Clintars.
I try not to give my sister too many, you know, inside information things while we're watching the movies.
Oh, yeah, I'm ruining
it. If she'll ask, I'll answer some stuff, or I'll tell them, yeah, that's from the comics. But I do think the movie has to establish its own lore in the process.
Yeah, very true. But she actually really liked the movie. And so I'm not going to tell you anything about it, but she did enjoy that one.
Cool. Good. It's like I said, it's on the list. It's just a matter of finding the time.
Yeah, it's all time consuming. Hey, and one other thing I was going to ask you, since we reviewed this number one, and I was really going to ask you this. Okay, we kind of went over where we thought it kind of went off, Fair Lady. What do you think makes a good number one issue? Like, what do you think you have to do? Because you want to write a comic one day.
Yeah.
And if you write a comic, what do you think you have to include to hook your readers?
You've got to firmly establish the premise. You've got to have a character worth following.
Yes.
Whether it's likable or unlikable, it's got to be something somebody says, I want to see what happens to this character next. And you've got to get far enough into the story it doesn't feel like you're teasing the story.
Yes.
And there's got to be something, preferably multiple somethings, for the reader or audience member, if it's, you know, a movie, TV show, same sort of things apply, for them to kind of hang their hat on and say, you know, I like the witty dialogue, or I love the action sequence, or the plot was really cool. Man, they had some great ideas of just new concepts, new things to, new technology or whatever, if it's a sci-fi sort of a thing or something. Or that the world feels realized enough that you feel you've gone to the world, not somebody's told you a story.
I like that.
I literally have sitting here next to me probably about 24 books on writing and creating comics and stuff that... The original plan this year was to actually have reviewed a few by now, but that hadn't happened yet and probably won't for a little bit. But trying to articulate what it is about a comic that works for me and doesn't is one of the things that's on my kind of to-do list.
That'd be cool.
And for different people, it's going to be different things. For some, it's just, hey, it's got to be new. It's got to be different. I don't necessarily need different.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. Because sometimes the tried and true can be very comforting and very good.
Yeah. And it may be that it's a concept I've seen done 1,000 times. Man, if they can nail the execution.
Well, you know, a perfect example of that would be Mark Millar. He takes concepts that are not new, and he writes a much better story.
He's good on the execution. I think if you were to team him up with somebody who just had some inherently brilliant ideas but just couldn't quite do the execution, you could have some great stuff. Not that what you have already isn't great stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's done a riff on Batman. He's done a riff on The Smartest Man in the World, which you could argue is Doc Savage with Prodigy or whatever. These aren't new ideas. Now, again, good execution counts for a lot, but there are other times where I'll go for a lesser execution if it's just a really cool idea.
No, for sure. I know exactly what you mean. Like, I can't help but think, you know, just going down the DC road, you know, if Justice League, those new forces, I think if Mark Millar would have scripted that idea, it would have come out so much better.
Yeah.
I mean, and there's nothing wrong with Snyder, but the way he scripted it was like, it's all over the place.
Yeah, it's not. It didn't sell us on the idea of being inherently cool, fascinating, or whatever.
Yeah.
There was an opportunity for some really fun world building, and they did the world building. It just wasn't really fun.
I agree with you there. So, and what's weird is Snyder's growing on me. By the way, I pre-ordered his Batman omnibus, so I will be reading his Batman, and we'll see how I like that.
Okay.
But his writing's growing on me. But what you guys keep telling me, he keeps on trying to out Morrison, basically coming up with the crazy ideas, which maybe he should, you know, pull back a little bit on that.
I would almost phrase it as out Jeff Johns and Jeff Johns.
Oh, out Jeff Johns. Okay, out Jeff Johns and Jeff Johns with the crazy ideas. All right.
Yeah, because with some of that, it was a matter of, you know, when Jeff Johns built up the Green Lantern other cores and stuff, that was definite world building. But it was cool world building, and it was a slow burn, not just, hey, isn't this a brilliant idea or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's there are ways to do it right, and there are ways to do it not so right.
And right now, I can't help but feel like it's building up to something big. We've been talking about that forever. I just want it to happen. I'm getting so tired of it.
The slow burn, I think, is a bad move, but also the throw it out so fast and see what sticks is a bad move.
Yeah. Hey, if you're going to throw all the 100 ideas out, I want to see 100 ideas used. I don't want to see like 50 of them used and the other 50 just disappeared.
Yeah, yeah. It's got to be worth my time to read.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't matter, it's not.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. So anything you're enjoying right now with your reading? Anything that's, you know, you're really into right now?
I actually got a ton of reading done this past weekend. I read about 71 comics.
Wow.
I actually got 33 this week, most of which were new, but some of them were some other stuff I'd asked Eric to get for me to fill some gaps or whatever, so that was some of it. Probably the best thing I read was that Man and Superman 100-page spectacular that Wolfman did.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that.
It was fun stuff. He really nailed the character just beautifully, which is unsurprising. He's a terrific writer.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think what else I read that was particularly good. There were a lot of things that were just kind of okay, and I'm trying to think if a lot of them were just kind of okay. There were one or two that it's like, yeah, in hindsight, if I'd had it to do over, I probably wouldn't have gotten.
Yeah. That happens.
There were a couple of things about the $6 Million Man series, the miniseries they're doing over at Dynamite, that it's like, did they not watch the show?
Yeah, completely different. You're like, what's going on?
He's not a complete robot.
Hey, the last time we saw it, he had those little blinker things coming out of the side of his head.
Yeah, well, there were a couple of things they did that it's like, okay, this is a radically different take. They're still trying to do it as if it's the Lee Majors, you know, TV show version, but it's not.
Yeah.
Did
you read any of that relaunch of the Transformers or no?
No, I have not.
Okay, I tried it. And I basically, you know, you pre-order. So I ordered probably the first 6 issues because it was double shipping. And I was just like, man, this is not good. I'm done. It just didn't hook me.
I haven't been reading Transformers other than the Star Trek Transformers crossover in a while.
Yeah, I was just not impressed.
I'm not that big of a fan. There have been times they've done some good stories. It's like, okay, I'm curious and I'll be in for a bit, but I don't have the affinity for Transformers or even G.I. Joe that a lot of people do.
Yeah. Actually, the funny thing that I read that I most enjoyed, I posted pictures on the Slack channel, the Menage a Three by Giselle I think it's Lagasse and David Lundsden. I'm butchering their names. But it's funny. It's like a three is company, but like a much more mature version of it. But my wife's like, why are you reading that? I'm like, I don't know why, but I can't put it down. It's just, I don't know why. It's hilarious. It's like a mix of Archie, Three's Company, but a much more mature setting, and I've been hooked on it. So I was happy to see I read the third omnibus, and the fourth one is coming out in September.
Well, but I think that's the challenge that I'm going to put to you and the listeners, just like you kind of put it to me, of what makes a good comic.
Ah, we got to tell you why that's a good comic.
What I mean, there's something that you like, and if you can figure out what it is that about it that you like, then other people can help you find other stuff that's similar in that way.
Ah, okay. All right. So a challenge. Should we talk about this in the Slack channel, or should we talk about it now?
Little of both. I mean, it's to me, it's hard to articulate sometimes what it is about a book that you like.
Yeah, well, me, what I'm finding out is there's some writers I'm drawn to. Like, I really mean I'm drawn to certain writers. Like, Jason Aaron, when he writes something, 99.9% of the time, I end up liking it. And I'm also drawn to Mark Millar. I'm also drawn to... and then it kind of goes off from there. Like, Jeff Johns, I've enjoyed everything that I've read of his. Now, you start getting off into, like, maybe a Brian Michael Bendis, I enjoy maybe 80% of what he's writing. So it depends on the writer. They're not always a hit. But with me, it's like... The genres, it comes down to, do I feel like it's talking down to me? Does it feel like it's talking to my age group? And is it something that, for me, is kind of in my wheelhouse? Like, you know I'm in the swords and sandals genre. You know I'm into superheroes. You know I'm into, like, more mature titles. So if it's, like, hitting in one of those areas, then it can be a hit. And then a lot of times it comes down to art. Those are, like, the things that kind of hook me. Who's writing it? Is it in my wheelhouse? And does it have decent art? If you hit on 2 out of 3, it's probably good. If you hit 3 out of 3, it just captivates me, and I'm in it, and I'm like... And what's weird is, like, this thing, this Menage a Three, it almost reminds me, like, a Three's Company or, like, an Archie. So it's, like, that slice of life, but more mature, and I just read on and on and on, and I can't stop reading it until I'm done.
I guess for me, writers, creative teams, writers in particular... they're either kind of in alignment with you, or they're almost sometimes diametrically opposed.
Yeah.
And the more closely aligned they are, maybe they're a little off. You know, again, you get that 80% hit rate or that 20% hit rate. But if they're more aligned, most of what they do kind of works for you and such. And different people have kind of different alignments. What works for me may be absolutely wrong for somebody else and vice versa. But I think a really talented writer can take something where even the genre is not something you gravitate towards, but man, they did such a good job with it. I mean, to me, Mark Waid on Archie.
That's a perfect example.
You know, I think Waid, his writing style is in alignment with my reading style, and I like a lot of what he does. Not to say universally all of it, most that I've read.
No, it's very true. Mark Waid does it for me, too. And if he's writing a book, it's almost always that I like his book, and I would have never read Archie, never picked it up, bought it because Mark Waid was relaunching, and I can't remember, Preview Spotlight, someone mentioned it. So I bought it, and I really liked it. And now that the writer's changed, it's okay, but it's not nearly as good as when Mark Waid was on it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I think part of it was not just the shift in writers, but going almost a little bit more Riverdale approach.
Yeah, and I'm not into that Riverdale TV show. It's like, not for me.
Watch the pilot, it turned me off, haven't been back.
Yeah, you and I are in alignment. We get along well.
Certainly helps. We've got enough difference of opinions in some places. That's fun too, though.
Yeah, minus the blood and gore, right?
Yes, that's a definite turnoff for me.
And the swords and sandal genre. You're not into that or the fantasy too much.
Yeah, there have been a couple of times I'll get into that if it's just really well done, but it's the exception, not the rule.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if you want something fun, I will recommend this book for you. I'll keep posting pictures every time I buy a new omnibus because I'm into it.
Cool. So let's see. Coming up, we've got the Preview Spotlight. The deadline for that is going to be Saturday morning, May 5th. I may have said May 4th last time, whichever the Saturday is. I guess that is the 4th.
Yeah. May the 4th be with you.
I need to get a calendar with bigger print. Let me go update that in my notes. It's the 4th. So I had it right last time. Maybe I said the 5th last time. Whatever. It's the Saturday. It's always the second Saturday after Previews is released.
Okay.
Previews comes out on a Wednesday. Spend that Saturday figuring out your picks, because by the next Saturday, I got to have them.
And the last Preview Spotlight was so awesome because we had so many new people sending clips, and I was so happy to hear the diversity other than... not that the same voices are bad, but it's so cool having more people.
It's great. There was a ton of clips. People got them in early, so it was easy for me to do the episode, even though I was going to Power Morphicon Express that weekend. It was a 2-hour, 15-minute or so episode.
I loved it, loved it, loved it.
So it was great. Hopefully we'll have similar turnout. And sometimes it depends what's in the previews as to how excited people are to send in clips. I get it. Believe me, I'm right there with you. But we got that coming up, and then the following weekend, Saturday, May 11th, is the teleconference. We just had one this past weekend, and it was pretty much just me, Sam, and Dom. We had a really great discussion. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, Oh, I forgot about that. I missed out. I'm sorry.
I was actually a few minutes late myself. I was having some computer problems. Windows 10 inflicted an update on me on short notice saying, yep, this may take a while. They weren't kidding.
Ah.
It took until the next morning for that machine to be back up and running. And since then, it's updated itself again and has more updates it wants to do.
Good Lord.
It's like I thought the whole point of Windows 10 is not to have to reboot the system so damn often.
That's horrible.
So I'm not particularly overjoyed with you know, Windows at the moment. But, you know, hey, go figure.
Stuff happens.
It does. It does. It's just I'd rather schedule when these things are going to happen when it's convenient for me versus, hey, you got to do it right now.
Okay.
Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That pretty much does it.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss Naomi number 4 from DC, Avengers No Road Home number 10 from Marvel, and Port of Earth number 9 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.